We're really happy to have with us today Betty Croswick as a speaker. She's an activist, an author, an ex-prisoner. She was a co-accused of Harriet Nahaney. She's a great-grandmother, and she's running for mayor. And so she's going to invite everyone to come in and visit her down at the Work Less Party. Go and join them. She's got two books that I know of, and maybe she's got more. She's got Unlock Me Up or Let Me Go, and her newest book is Open Living Confidential, and it's from inside the joint. Betty?
Thank you, Phyllis. I'm really happy to be here. To tell you the truth, I'm happy to be anywhere that's not in prison. But I'm particularly happy to be here because I believe that justice for prisoners is fundamental to our having any kind of a really egalitarian, authentic society. It has to start there with the ones who are complete prisoners of the state. I want to talk, though, this morning primarily about Harriet Nahaney. Harriet didn't die in jail, but she died as shortly after she was released from Surrey pretrial as a result of the conditions at Surrey pretrial. I first met Harriet when she came to Eagle Ridge Bluffs 2 years ago when we were having first started our blockade there. Harriet came as an individual Indian. She insisted on being called an Indian. She said First Nations was a white man's term. And even though Indian was a white man's term too, she said she preferred it to First Nations. So I'm going to refer to her out of respect as an Indian. She came to Eagle Ridge Bluffs the first day that we were setting up our tents out there in protest of what was happening to this wonderful old growth, wetland, cliffs, wildlife, streams, eagles, rare birds, rare amphibians. She came there to this wonderful space and she said, "This is Squamish territory, and as a Squamish woman, I want to protect this territory." She welcomed us to the territory with the songs and with prayers. And then she started coming to stand with us on the blockade. That blockade lasted for 5 weeks, and she came not every day, but so frequently, it seemed that she was there most of the time. And we became very well acquainted with each other because we were roughly the same age. We had been through a lot of the same hard times of early poverty, of, husbands who don't do what they're supposed to do, rearing children, and we had both lost daughters. So we were very close. In a short time, I felt closer to Harriet than I have to a lot of other people my own age, because she recognized that with the loss of Eagle Ridge Bluffs, we were losing something besides just a rare ecosystem. She was losing a claim, an Indian claim, to the right to historical lands that her own chief and council had agreed to having traded it away. So I felt such admiration for her because she was fighting not only her chief and council in agreeing to the turnover of this historical ecosystem that had been Squamish land to developers. She was fighting my chief and council, the government, She was fighting on all fronts. She was truly this incredible warrior woman. And because I knew she was having difficulty in her own reserve because of the discontent that was leveled at her for coming out as an individual woman to do this, that she was having a lot of trouble in her own reserve. So I understood her position, having gone through something like this myself in times past, and I admired her greatly. She stood with us and was arrested with us. In court, when she was tried, she tried to bring into the courtroom the proclamation of 1763, which said that that Indian lands were not to be disturbed in their historical places of history. So her band sent two lawyers to argue in court that Harriet should not be allowed to do this, because she did not represent the Squamish people. You know, the chief, the elected chief, represented the Squamish people, and they had made this accommodation. So the lawyers argued that that Harriet should not even be allowed to speak in court at all of the proclamation. The judge agreed, did not allow her to speak at all of the proclamation. When Harriet tried to insist, the judge got up and walked away. So Harriet was defeated on all counts in trying to bring into the court system some level of recognition that Indians, individual Indians, have rights outside the boundaries of what elected chiefs might do, who too often will make decisions on business parameters. So here she was in court, not allowed to speak. So when the judge sentenced her, but before the judge sentenced her, while she was still free, Harriet called me one morning and she said, "Betty, I have to go back up to Eagle Ridge Bluffs." Well, the cops swarming all over the place up there because they were had resumed work. And I said, "No, Harriet, don't go, because they'll just arrest you again. And this time, you know, it's going to be a lot worse for you." Because Harriet wasn't well. She had chronic asthma, and she had had other health problems. But she said, "No, I want to go." She said, "I'm an elder, and I want to say passionate prayers." She actually was from the island, from the passionate people. Originally, she had married into the Squamish band, but all her children were Squamish, lived on the reserve, and grandchildren. So she said, "I want to do this. I have to do this. It's my duty as an elder to go up there and say prayers and to sing the death songs for all of the dying things up there in Eagle Ridge Bluffs." So I said, "No, can't you say the prayers here? Don't go back up there." And she said, "No, I have to. It's my duty as an elder." And she said, "Especially I want to say a prayer for the red-legged frogs." And I said, "Why just for the red-legged frogs?" She said, "Because in our culture, when the last red-legged frog dies, all humanity will perish." And then I thought about New Orleans. I'm from New Orleans, and the hurricane there that swept everything away. I know from my childhood that those wetlands have been decreasingly developed all the way from New Orleans to Baton Rouge, where what used to be oak forest, cypress forest, huge bodies of material, plant material, teeming with life, now are teeming with casinos, with floating casinos, and with oil rigs, so that when that Katrina came in, there was nothing to stop it. Wetlands act as barriers and put up a barrier that buffets the winds. Now there's no barriers there. They're all gone. And I thought about this and I said, okay, Harriet, but wait for me. I'm going with you. So we went up there that Sunday. We walked in. The cops were all around us. We just pushed. Harriet said, I'm going to say a prayer. And they said, okay. She says, for the things up there that are dead and dying. And they said, well, okay. But every time we'd take a step, they'd take a step. So there were these cops all around us. But Harriet said the prayers, and she sang the song in her native language, so they couldn't tell what was being said, neither could I, but I trusted Harriet. And then we walked away, and they didn't try to arrest us. In court, when Harriet was tried, they let me sit with Harriet as what's called a McKinsey friend of the court. That is to make sure that she understood everything the court said. And part of this was because Harriet was a bit hard of hearing. So when the judge said that she sentenced Harriet to 14 days incarceration, I couldn't believe it. Because I'd written a letter to the judge saying Harriet is not a well woman. I'd done this weeks before she was tried. I said she has health problems. She's never been arrested before. She's never been in prison before. Please have some consideration for her health problem. But the judge didn't. She gave her 14 days, and I knew they would be sent at Surrey pretrial, which is a hellhole. I knew it was a hellhole because I have been there. I know it's a hellhole, and I know what goes on there. And Harriet was there for 9 days before they released her. She had no medical attention. They offered her a psychiatrist. But no medical attention. She didn't have enough blankets, she told me, and that she was very cold. Well, she caught pneumonia. She got out on a Saturday, but she insisted on going with me to the courthouse the following Monday to file an appeal for her. She wanted to appeal her sentence under the proclamation of 1763. I filled out her appeal papers and we filed them. 3 days later, she was in the hospital and she died the following Saturday from having to endure the obscene conditions in Surrey pretrial, where everything is dirty. The air is just, women's prison is just sort of tacked onto the men, so there's no, you can't get outside 1 hour onto a cement court. The food is lousy. You're subject to violence because of the places where violence might occur among women. It is at Surrey pretrial because it's so crowded. So I left that situation with a very heavy heart. And to this day, Harriet is with me because I want to try to get a judicial review of Harriet's incarceration and her death and of the injustice of the social system, the legal system. I would really like it if her relatives, if some of her relatives would ask, just write a letter asking for a judicial review. That is all it would take. And it would have a humongous effect on the judicial system. So I appeal to Harriet's relatives to let's do this. Let's strike this blow for justice so that Indian people are not treated like trash when they appear before the courts of this country. I thank you.